This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
The header is good, and it's the giant defender John Tewook, and eventually Correa have broken the deadlock.
You're listening to the K-League United podcast, proud partner of Football Nation Radio.
Hello, Angaseo. Ryan Walters in the K-League United bunker, joined virtually this week by Matthew Binns.
Hello.
And for the first time on the full podcast, George Slade joins us. George, how you doing?
Hello. Good to finally be here on the real thing.
Well, you were on the fake thing earlier. We had an interview that you did before as part of the background with Buchan 1995. I still love that team name every time I say it, but... And might have another one of those coming up soon. But yeah, good to get you onto the full pod here. And hopefully we'll be able to see you at the next K-League United Express Cup. We're hoping to see a Buchan team there. Are you going to be able to form one for us?
Oh, might be a challenge, I think. But I would love to come and attend, definitely. But I'm not sure about the team. But definitely be a cheerleader for hire for someone.
Well, most of my team was just a team for hire. If you look at any of the pictures, there were two of us with FC Seoul kits on. And before we get into it, and I see Matthew's already grinning, thinking about it. Shame on Steve Price. Shame for being an FC Seoul fan and not having an FC Seoul shirt.
He's a secret Seoul Elan fan, though. I've seen him more times at Seoul Elan wearing his Seoul Elan shirt than I have in FC Seoul.
And he does actually have a Seoul Elan kit. So
maybe we should bring the victory of Solchester United into question. Maybe there was a
he was in net for a few of those. That's true.
Yeah.
So the weekend that was, it was a good time, and we don't need to talk about where certain teams, mine, may have finished in the standings last. Things were good, and congratulations to the team that we've supported and sponsored in the Seoul Saturday Soccer League for a while, FC Ince, for just absolutely crushing almost everybody in front of them. Although Incheon Luke's friend of the show, Luke, his team Godchun from Incheon, so you'll have to ask them about the name. They put up a fight. The final was 3-2. Mm. They looked good in it, and they looked good because they were wearing the Incheon kits, so that was mainly why they looked good, and I don't think there's anything else we need to mention about the tournament, correct, Matthew?
No, there's lots. There's lots of other things to mention. You seem to have forgotten everything. No, there was Michael Redmond's team, big Michael Redmond. He brought the Solchester United down, all in the Seoul Elan kits. And, if you look on our Twitter under hashtag KLU Express Cup, you'll see some of those post-match videos that we recorded. Michael was very, very pleased with his win over the FC Soulmates and the goals he scored in the process. Well, I believe you may have been in goal for one of them if that picture that's going around at the moment is worth anything.
I can't recall.
I think my favourite moment of the tournament, though, was James Walsh, former Anton writer. And he's actually a former FC Ince player, the team that won. And he was playing for the Solchester United, and he is the only person in the tournament to get a red card for... He got two bookings for sliding tackles on AstroTurf. He claims the first one he just fell to ground by accident, and it was to go to the disciplinary panel. But speaking to FC Ince captain John Georgie after the match, it was clear that perhaps, you know, what he was saying, James is a good guy off the pitch, but, you know, perhaps there's some sort of unresolved issues there. Perhaps he...
I will point out that the matches were 14 minutes and he managed to get two yellow cards in that amount of time. So that is...
He disputes the first. And I'm sure he'd want me to state that.
Yeah. Well, we'll take it up with VAR next time. But anyway, it was a great tournament and hopefully we can have some more folks involved next time. And we'll have some information on the site if you want to get involved with Ince or if you want to get involved with Seoul Sports, the fine folks that organized everything for us. But... We're done talking about me finishing dead last in a four-team tournament. Although we did win the Seoul Derby. That's very important to point out. One on aggregate. No big deal. Just own Seoul. Seoul is red. That's all I got to say. All right. Anyway, speaking of Seoul and FC Seoul and disappointment, we are going to be talking about the K-League One weekend that was, and just kind of each give our main takeaways from the weekend. And then George and I are going to hop out, and Matthew Binns is going to have his interview with Lars Veldwijk, a name that I now know I've been saying wrong for a long time, about his switch over to Suwon FC, what it's like in K2 in the brief time he's been there, and a bunch of other things. A really good interview there. And then we're going to come back. We're going to talk about K-League 2. We're going to talk about the weekend that's coming up there and in K-League 1. And then there are a few things in the mailbag. So full pod as always. So gentlemen, let's just go ahead and hop right in. All right, let's get started in K-League 1 and the weekend that was in round 13. Just to go through the scores really quickly, we had Sangju Sangmu losing 5-1 to Ulsan Hyundai. Seongnam and Gangwon played out a 0-0 draw that Gwangju lost 1-0 to Suwon Blue Wings 1 week too late. Thank you, Suwon. Jeonbuk Hyundai Motors got back to winning ways with a 3-0 victory over FC Seoul. Pohang Steelers could not see off a feisty Incheon United. That one finished 1-1. And Daegu FC, they're back. They weren't gone for very long, but they're back. They won 3-0 over Busan I-Park. And gentlemen, what were your main takeaways? George, we'll get started with you on this one.
Mine is quite clearly the Great Escape is on. Incheon are just going to claw their way up. Is it possible to draw your way to safety? Who knows? But I think, well, they've looked a lot better. And they performed a lot better than they have in the previous couple of months. They've had 3 draws in a row, which is their best streak for a very long time. So I think, actually, if you look at the table, 2 wins, they've overtaken Seoul if they can actually get a win. So, and yeah, we'll look at who they're playing next week, because that is a bit of an indicator. But yeah, that was my main takeaway, is that Incheon haven't lost.
I told you, it's contagious. Never doubt Incheon publicly. Matthew, what was your takeaway?
Well, I've gone for the match I was actually at. I travelled down to Jeonju on Sunday, and I took in Jeonbuk playing host to FC Seoul. Bit of a rivalry, obviously. Not much love lost between the two sides. And I want to say how good Jeonbuk were, and they were. And I will come back to that in a minute, because there's 2 points within this one. But I think the first one was just how bad Seoul actually are. And it links back into what George was saying. Incheon could possibly draw their way to safety if Seoul do not get out of gear. Paul and I were talking about this on an extra pod that's come out this week, came out on Tuesday, when we're talking about Ki Sung Young's potential influence. But my word, FC Seoul are in trouble. They lacked any ideas, and they just were so deep that at one point it felt like they had the majority of their players just in their own half camp there, and Jeonbuk just didn't need to come forward. We talk about sometimes Jeonbuk playing boring football or lacking any kind of incisiveness, but they didn't need to attack because Seoul found themselves trying not to lose more than 2-0. It was unforgivable, really. I'd be distraught if I was a Seoul fan, but I'm sure they've been placated by the signing of Ki Sung Young, who wasn't there on Sunday. He's not going to be at full fitness till mid-August, but there was one former Swansea City star that everybody had their eyes on, and that was Modo Varro off the bench, and he came on. He did very well, I thought, down the left wing. I mean, when you've got a Seoul defence as willing to let you run that far forward, willing to not challenge you as much, then perhaps it can exaggerate how well you are playing. But he did well. It was a good debut. You know, you can't really expect more than that. I'd like to see more of him, and I am going to touch, there's a question in the mailbag where I'm going to touch on his potential influence more. But the other player that came on, and I think it's worth mentioning, is Gustavo. Now, Jeonbuk, these two signings, Jeonbuk has spent close to $5 million on these two players, which is potentially one of their biggest combine that with the January window, it's potentially one of their biggest outlays ever. It's definitely the biggest outlay since I've been covering them. They've never spent this much money. So when we talk about Jose Moraes under pressure, well, yes, because he's being backed. But Gustavo, he came in, it's different figures being bandied about because Jeonbuk didn't just have to pay Corinthians. The player's part was part owned by other clubs. So when it all accumulated together, it was about just under $3 million, I believe. But he looked good, Gustavo. What I liked about him is he did drop back as well in the attacking build-up. It was a header that he got in the end. I kind of made fun about it on Twitter that in the press release that Jeonbuk had just said he's tall and he's good with his head and he scored a header, but he did come back and help with the attacking build-up. I think two promising signings there from John Book, but still probably FC Seoul is not the best thing to measure them against, given how bad they were.
We talked about that the last time they beat FC Seoul, and at the time, which is hard to believe, had Seoul won that, they would have been first in the league. And we thought that that was a statement win of sorts from John Book, but that definitely was not the case. As far as my big takeaway from the weekend, I went with Ulsan because Ulsan are just not messing around right now. Ulsan beat a tremendously good Sangju Sangmu side. Sangju had one of the league's best defensive records heading into the match. They have 7 clean sheets this season, including 5 of their previous 6. One of those includes a 1-0 victory over Jeonbuk, and the Hwarangi just tore them to shreds. Junior apparently just scores when he wants. He added another brace to get up to 17 this season. 17 so far. 17 would be great for the year, and he's already there. And Lee Dong-kyun just put an exclamation point on this victory. His goal, the 5th one, just this lovely curled effort. I mean, he knew it as soon as he hit it as well. When you watch that replay, the thing that I love about it is the confidence that he had to hit it, how well he hit it, and then as soon as it's off his foot, he's turned around celebrating because he knows it's going in. And that's how Ulsan are playing right now. They're just really, really confident. They look great. And like I said, that Sangju side, Sangju might somehow finish for ACL positioning this year. And Ulsan put 5 up on him. It was quite the show. And this is a big if, they can manage to finally get one over on Jeonbuk this year, that's all they really need, in my opinion. They need to finally get that monkey off of their back. But we'll see. And like you said, Matt, I think it's going to be really telling to see if Jeonbuk's actually quite good or if it was who they were playing. Because we do know that Seoul is that bad this year, but Jeonbuk did look better. And I think those new signings will help out as well. But Ulsan, they are definitely up for the challenge. And that's how it went in K-League 1. But we brought George on, and we like fun. So, of course, we're going to talk about the K-League 2. So let's go ahead and hop over to the division that refuses to be defined by absolutely anything. And it was another absolutely crazy weekend. FC Anyang, this one, we expected this. FC Anyang lost 2-0 to Suwon FC. Probably could have been a little bit more, to be honest. This one was a surprise. You never get involved in a game with Seoul Eland if it involves Survivor Series. Seoul Eland lost 2-1 to Cheongnam Asan, and Asan definitely could have had a few more in that one, to be honest. Busan 1995 and Ansan Greener saw it a 0-0 draw. Jeonnam Dragons drew 1-1 with Gyeongnam FC, and Daejeon Hana Citizen beat Jeju United 2-1, which is a massive, massive win for Daejeon, and I think one of us will probably be talking about that. And Matt's got his eyebrows up, so Matt, I'm going to come to you first. What was your main takeaway from the K2 weekend?
Well, that was it. I chose the final game of the round, the Daejeon versus Jeju match. We had it on while I was at the Jeonbuk game in the quad box on Naver. And I think what impressed me was just how well Daejeon bounced back after they were thrashed last week by Suwon. They were made to look like amateurs. Yeah. The defense was torn apart. And they looked far more solid against the Jeju side that is very strong. It's a promotion contender. They started off well, Jeju. They got a penalty within 13 minutes. Easy saw giving away the penalty for Daejeon. I know he's been a bit hit and miss for Daejeon this season. Mm-hmm. Me and Paul were talking about last week on the under-22 segment that we did. But the Jumin Q stepped up and he missed it. It was not a good penalty. No. That was probably the most surprising thing about it. And then, yeah, Daejeon slowly clicked into the gear after the half. Park Yong-ji, he opened the scoring before. Jeju did peg them back quite quickly. Kong Min-hyo with the equalizer. But then Andre Luis, he just keeps finding goals. Mm-hmm. Maybe not at the rate of Suwon FC's An Byung-jun, but I think at the end of the season, Andre Luis is going to be up there in MVP contention. And it was a good goal, low into the bottom right corner. I don't think there was much pace on it, but I don't know whether the keeper saw it until late. Perhaps could have done a bit better there, but deserving winners. And yeah, wonder whether, how much of a blip was last week, to be honest. So yeah, Daejeon returning to form.
Yeah, an important win for them, definitely. George, what was your main takeaway?
Well, I would like to have said, talked about Buchon, but 0-0 draw.
Yeah.
Wasn't the most dramatic game. All I can say is that Buchon did dominate, but they just can't score. They can't finish. They're like one of the lowest ones in the league. And that's why they brought in their new loan signing, Choi Byung-chan, who actually did look quite good brought off from the bench. But there's not much say so far, you know, this week about Buchan. I was actually quite impressed with Chungnam Asan in their win away to Seoul Eland, because one is that they won, which was fantastic. It's their second time this season. And it was actually a come-from-behind victory, so it showed some good mental strength. And it wasn't like a fluke. They didn't just get two shots in. They hit the post twice, once in the 36th minute, and that led to the penalty. And once again in the 59th minute. And on top of the two goals they already had, they had a penalty chance denied to them quite early in the match.
Which,
and
that, if anybody's seen that replay, how is that not a penalty?
Oh, it's baffling.
I had to interject there. I still don't know how that one's not a penalty.
Yeah, luckily it didn't affect them. They still got the win.
Yeah.
But there they were just good. And they're actually now only, I think, 2 points behind Gyeongnam. You know, so they now they're actually looking quite good, maybe, if they can sustain it.
Yeah, I mean, this is the lovely thing about K-League 2. Like you say, they're only 2 points behind Gyeongnam, a team that we really thought was going to be challenging for promotion. And it seems like a big gap right now. They're 7 points behind Jeonnam for the final playoff spot. But you never know how K-League 2 is going to go. Like, that 7 points could happen really quickly. And like you say, George, I think they really looked, they deserved that win. They looked like they were going to win that match. And that's just not been the case for a long time for them. So that was definitely nice to see. As far as my K-League 2 takeaway, Hernandez Rodriguez da Silva. Remember that name, ladies and gentlemen, because he is just 20 years old and he put on a show in his debut, just breaking ankles. I mean, this young man was all over the field. His first performance was so good that K-League put together a highlight reel of what he did at the end of the match as well, because he was subbed on in the second half. He didn't even go the full game, and he scored in his debut. And I think for me as a Dragons fan, he looks like the difference maker that we've been missing, and he looks explosive. He looks like he can create on his own. He did create on his own, you know, and he literally left defenders on the floor. So this is somebody that I think is going to really change the shape of the team. And I think he's going to add a lot to the attack to get Kristoffersen and Lee Jung-ho going a little bit more, because now there won't be as much pressure on those guys. And if we can see this Jeonnam Dragons team that has been outstanding in defense, if we can see them have an attack, like just have an attack that could score even just one goal a game, two goals a game on average, they're going to start winning a lot of games. And if the attack can get going anywhere near what the defense has been, they might be creeping up into that top spot. But that's me dreaming. They definitely will solidify their playoff spot, though. And I think that Hernandez could be that difference maker that kind of gets them there, because he just looked really impressive. But it was one performance, so we have to, and when I say we, I mean I, have to kind of tamper expectations a little bit. But I thought he was really, really impressive.
Yeah, I've seen a few of the highlights going around, but I didn't realize he'd only played for 45 minutes because I didn't catch the match. But that is impressive if they're putting out highlight reels on what he did. He looked certainly looked the part, and very exciting talent to bring into the K-League too.
Which, this is one of the conversations that was going on Twitter. Dan Croydon was commenting that there's a lot of really good talent in K-League 2 this year, a lot of really good Brazilian talent in K-League 2 this year. Leandro with Seoul Eland, now Hernandez with Jeonnam, we'll see. Andre Luis definitely with Daejeon. It seems like the scouts are really doing their homework this year, and we just need to get one of them over to Buchan, right, George?
Well, we've got two, but, you know, they're just don't score. They've assisted a bunch, but there's not the spark that some of the other Brazilians bring to their teams.
I mean, Buchan, yeah, that 0-0 over the weekend, really, like you say, they just can't finish, and that it shouldn't have been 0-0 because they created a couple of lovely chances and just couldn't manage to find the back of the net. But we'll see. Maybe they'll come back. It's K2. Any team can make the playoffs. It's insanity. One man that is now in that division and in the driver's seat in it and scoring plenty of goals is somebody that Matthew Binns is going to be talking to on the other side of this break. It's Suwon FC's Lars Veldwijk. We'll be right back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email KLU at info@kleagueunited.com or tweet at @KLeagueUnited with any questions, comments or reactions. Or follow us on Facebook to ask directly during one of our live shows.
Welcome back to the K-League United podcast. I'm Matthew Binns. Joining me now on the line is the South African international striker whose career has seen him play in the Netherlands, England and Belgium, to name a few. January saw him move from Sparta Rotterdam to K-League, where he signed for Jeonbuk Hyundai Motors before making the switch this summer to Suwon FC. It gives me great pleasure to welcome to the podcast Lars Veldwijk. Hello, Lars.
Hello, nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to finally have you on. You've been here for 6 months. We've still not managed to get you on the podcast, so it's great to finally have you here. Before we dive into any questions, though, I just want to point out that Lars is also now your new Korean name. It was Veldwijk in Korean. It's now been changed to Lars. Any reason for the rebrand?
Because when people saw me on the street or somewhere in Korea, they always say Veldwijk. Veldwijk or Veldwijk, but my surname is Veldwijk. When I signed for Jeonbuk, they told me that my surname is too long to be on the jersey, so they make it a little bit shorter. And then I think that was the reason why everybody say my surname wrong. So when I signed for Suwon, I thought maybe I need to do a much easier name, and that's Lars.
It's much easier for me. I was also going by the Korean name for a while when you were at Jeonbuk because I was confused as well. But yes, so we're going to be going with Lars today and from now on the K-League. So it's a new name. It's new surroundings as well. How are you settling in Suwon as a city and as a football club?
Very good so far. The club has helped me a lot to settle down quick, so that was really nice. I have my apartment already. Everything is good. Of course, it's a smaller club than the one I was before, but I'm really happy that I already played two games. We won both games, so yeah, that helps also to get a good relationship and to be part of the team. So yeah, we did really well. And the city, it's close to Seoul. It's a much bigger city. So yeah, there are a lot of positive things about this movement.
It's a very different vibe to Jeonju, I'd imagine.
Yeah, the city for sure. Yeah, Jeonju is in the middle and it's a much smaller city. So I need to get used to the traffic jam here and all these things. But yeah, it's good. There are a lot more things to do and a lot more choices about restaurant and all these things. So yeah, I enjoy it so far.
Have you got a particular favorite restaurant or favorite food that you're enjoying while you're now in Suwon?
No, I'm a bit new, so I try to find the new and good spaces. But it's a bit difficult because I don't like spicy food, and Korean people love spicy food. I also eat a lot of salads, so I need to find a good restaurants with good salads. So if anyone knows a place, you can always recommend me.
Okay, well, that's good to know. Anybody listening who might be in Suwon, surely can recommend. I used to live in Suwon myself, but I was more of a Suwon galbi man there. The Suwon local cuisine is galbi, the beef ribs. Yeah. I don't know if you've tried them yet.
Yeah, now to be honest, I like the Korean food as long as it's not spicy. I love the Korean barbecue and the beef, so yeah. I try to combine everything.
Well, that's good to hear. So let's talk more about your move to Korea, to K-League as a whole. We have a question in from Twitter. This is from Dan Croydon. He wants to know about players moving directly to Korea from the Eredivisie, as we've had a few players come here recently, such as Ulsan Hyundai's Dave Boutuis and Bjorn Johnson. But Dan is asking if you were in contact with them when you were making the move, or who were you in contact with before your move here?
I've spoke to Boutuis a lot. He was already playing here for a year. So, of course, I was asking him, and also Lucas Tanyos, about yeah the Korean lifestyle mm-hmm. and also about the league, because yeah the K-League is not on television in Holland. So yeah, there are things, of course, when you make a big move to another country far away from home, you do some research. But they were both really positive about the life and about the country, and of course also about the K-League. It's one of the biggest leagues in Asia. The quality is really good.
Dan also asks, what are your thoughts about the differences between the two divisions?
I think it's much more physical here. Like, all the Korean players has a really good discipline. So everybody is physical, really strong. A lot of people in Holland think Asian people are small, but like Korean people are not that small. You have some really big defenders and also really strong defenders. So I think that's a bit of miscommunication to Europe. They don't know how good the league is. Yeah.
No, certainly. We get a lot of players on, and the first thing they always say is the physicality of the league. It always seems to surprise a number of foreign players when they first come over. So when John Buck came calling then, you were reported to also be in talks with a side back in South Africa as well. So my question is, what is it about the John Buck offer that drew you to it and the challenge in the K-League?
Of course, if you can sign for a number one team mm-hmm. with a big reputation in Asia, you feel really honored. And yeah, you do some research and see they've been champion the last few years, and they play also in the ASL. So you see the facility, and you know, you heard what the story is about the club and how big they are. Then it's a much easier decision if a team as John Buck mm-hmm. come for you.
And when off the pitch at John Buck, you seem to bond very well with your teammates, particularly Takehiro Kunimoto. I noticed you and him are always together in restaurants on Instagram and things. What was it like behind the scenes there in John Buck, and who impressed you at that club?
I think behind the scenes, that's one of the qualities of the team. Like, they let me feel home from the first moment I joined the team in Spain, on the moment when they were on training camp. But the quality of the team is, we have a lot of outside, behind the training sessions or outside the training sessions, we do a lot of things together. And I think that's one of the most important things, to be a really good team together. And we have a lot of dinners together with the whole squad, even with the staff and all the physios. I think that's one of the strong points of John Buck, that they organize really, really a lot of things outside of the training sessions.
Yeah, and well, a last question on John Buck. We're obviously no longer at John Buck now, and we're going to talk about your new club, because your new club is playing some very exciting football. But what happened at John Buck, if you don't mind us asking, and why the mid-season transfer?
You know, the rule in Korea is with the three foreigners. Mm-hmm. I did the preseason really well. I was really fit and I was training really hard. One week before the league start, I had an injury on my knee. Mm-hmm. So I missed the first game, the second game, and the third game and fourth game. I play with painkillers and all these things. But I want to make my debut, and my debut went really well. But physically, my body was not good. So I think, you know, John Buck is a big club, and they saw me struggling with my knee and my physical, that they decide my contract was finished in December. I was not playing the 90-minute game. So, yeah, then you know a club as John Buck is always looking for other options, and they find two new options. And, yeah, I only respect that. They treat me very well. So there's nothing really happened. I think it's a bit unlucky with my injury and the game time I get. But it was all a bit unlucky.
Well, let's move on to more positive things then, because you've now moved to Suwon, and Suwon are the K-League 2 leaders. They are playing some very attractive attacking football. It has to be said, some were surprised you wanted to drop down to K-League 2. So I want to ask you, what was it that attracted you to Suwon FC?
To be honest, when my agent told me about what's going on at Jambuk and that it's better that we have to look to another team, we were talking about K-1 League teams, but he was also talking directly about Suwon. Like, they have a really good coach, they have a really good structure, they play really good football. So then I did some research about the team here, and the things that I saw and the story. I asked my teammates at Jambuk about the city and about the team, and everybody was really positive about the head coach here, and also about the way they play. That's what I have enjoyed the last two games, because we really play some good and nice football. We create many chances, so it's good and very nice to be at a bit similar team as Jambuk in the K1, because there we have a lot. Jambuk has always a lot the ball and attacking, and at Suwon we do a little bit the same.
There is actually a question. You were saying you were thinking about K1, some K1 clubs as well. There is a question in from Twitter from Todd Wild, and he's a Busan fan, so I'll let you guess maybe what he was asking here. But he wondered if there was any K-League 1 clubs that you were looking at also.
My agent has been spoke to some K1 League clubs. But for me, to be honest, I didn't saw a movement only for 3-4 months to go on loan or to go to sign to another team for 3-4 months. And yes, Suwon gave me the option to sign 6 months with an option for another 12 months. So hopefully we go to the K1 with Suwon, and then if I do well, I have another contract here.
Oh, well, that's good to hear. Suwon, like I said, been phenomenal this season. They've played some very attacking football, and they're rightly at the top and gunning for promotion. So tactically speaking, how different is their style from Jambuk? You said they both have a lot of possession, but is there any differences you find, and is your role any different at Suwon than it was at Jambuk?
To talk about specific things, it's difficult because I just here for 2 weeks. But if I look to myself, there's definitely a different role. At Jambuk, most of the time we played with one striker. If I come on now here, we play with two strikers, and I'm more like the second striker here than the main striker. So yeah, that's a new role for me. But I think the first two games went really well for us as a team, but also for me individually. So yeah, my role as a person is different than at Jambuk. Yeah,
that actually kind of goes into another question we've had in from Twitter. This is actually from the Dejon Citizen Fan Club Brazil. They are asking, how do you fit in playing alongside Ambyong Jun in the 4-2-3-1 formation?
Of course, when my agent was talking about Suwon, I saw they have the top scorer. So my first question was, why they want me? Because they already have a good striker. My agent told me, they want to give him some support, and yeah, that's my job now. And the first two games went really well, also with Masa, the Japanese player. Mm-hmm. We have a good feeling on the pitch so far, and we even only trained 2 weeks together. So it's going to be better and better as long as we play together. But the first two games, I think the combination between me and Masa and the striker, sorry, I don't gonna say his name because
I'm Ambyong Jun.
Yeah, then as long as we train and play together, hopefully it will be better and better.
That's good. You were talking about your manager earlier, Kim Do-kyun. This is actually Kim Do-kyun's first managing role in charge of a professional team. He's actually managed youth sides at Ulsan. He's managed a uni side in Sonnam Uni. And so my question is, what is your initial thoughts of him as a coach, and what is it like to play under Kim?
I think he's really really relaxed, and he's not putting any pressure on us. He wants us to enjoy when we play. He gives us a free role as well. Of course, he has some tactic things that we have to do, but he is an old player, so he understands the players really well, and his communication is very good. And I like that so far. It's difficult to say something because it's only 2 weeks, but so far the communication and the things he said are really good.
Speaking of first impressions, James Edgerupt has tweeted in. He's asking about your first impressions of the side and which players have stood out for you. I think we've already kind of touched on this, but is there any other players as well you'd like to mention?
I think in the two games we played, we only received one goal. So I think we had it about the two strikers or the attacking midfielder, but I think I can say something positive about the whole team. We did really well. We win two difficult away games. The defense looks. Of course, we do it with the whole team. It's not only the players who score, but we defense with the whole team. And the goalkeeper is doing a good job, and the defenders as well. And yeah, so I can say everyone on the moment. So it's as a team, we do really well on the moment.
So there's still some way to go regarding promotion. It's only halfway, really. Having now played in both divisions in one season, how far off do you believe Suwon are from being a K-League 1 club in terms of quality? So if Suwon FC were in the K-League 1 tomorrow, how do you see them faring in the K-League 1 table?
I think direct staying in the K1 league. They've beat Incheon in the FA Cup. They made it Busan very difficult. I think on this moment we are the best team in the K2. If you look to the table. I think we're not far away to be a good mid-table team in the K1.
We did have a question in from Hawaii the Lads via Twitter asking about your international career as well. He wants to know, do you still have aspirations on the international stage?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I only played 7 caps for the national team. I've been to the end tournament, Africa Cup, 1.5 years ago. That was really special for me, and I will never say no when the national team calls me up. But there's a new head coach. I didn't play a lot the last few months. If I'm gonna play and do what I have to do and score my goals, then hopefully I will get a call up again.
You must surely as well be in a good position at the moment due to the unfortunate circumstances the rest of the world are in at the moment. But many leagues have stopped, but the K-League has kept going. So you must be one of the few South African international players still playing regular football every week.
Yeah, that's true. I'm think one of the only one, because in South Africa the league is not starting. So I think I'm the only one on the moment who's playing. It also makes it hard to leave the country and to play international football because of the whole situation.
Of course. Well, hopefully all these hopefully the pandemic can get better soon. How is that for you personally as a player as well? I know you have a family, your family's back home and things. I imagine it must be quite difficult being over here.
Yeah, to be honest, yeah. When I was signing, I was the expectation to that my family sometimes come over and my parents. The last time I was in Holland was the first week of March, so I didn't see my family and my children now for 5 months. Of course, that's really difficult, especially when you're not playing. What I had at Jambouk, when you have a small role in the games and not enjoying the football, then it's really hard. Now the new step here and winning games and playing for a longer time, that gives some good. How do you say this? It's good when you play, then you have something to look forward to. It's hard when you not play and have an injury to not be with your family. It's a difficult situation.
Well, let's hope the situation gets better soon, and I hope all your family's keeping well and everything there. We're going to just kind of end the interview now. But before we do, I'd like to speak about your personal objectives for this year. What do you hope to achieve by the time the season finishes?
Of course, I hope that we be promoted to the K1. The best thing is, of course, directly to be the champion. But if not, we still have a good chance in the playoffs. As a team, I hope to go to the K1 with Suwon FC. And as for me as a person, I hope my knee will be fine for the last 3 months or 4 months in the league now. And of course, I want to score my goals and to be part of the team and help the team with goals and assists.
Well, hopefully you can get that against Ansan Greeners this weekend. Before we go, are there any messages you'd like to give to the fans?
I have one. I heard next week the fans are allowed to come back to the stadium. They've been really patient, and I know everybody's looking forward to come to the stadium again. Hopefully we can have full stadiums or more people inside soon, but it's important that everybody stay healthy and safe. So we still need to be careful, but I'm looking forward to see the fans finally at the stadium, and I hope they will enjoy it as well.
Lars Vasberg, thank you for coming on the podcast.
All right, thank you.
FNR is a revolutionary football-dedicated digital platform, the first of its kind in Australia. It provides a 24/7 live online radio platform experience, podcast hub, and acts as a content provider for TV, radio, and digital. Having reached millions of listeners and football fans since launching, FNR is accessible worldwide via its website or app, providing a platform to discuss, debate, and celebrate the world game. We are your voice of football, FNR Football Nation Radio.
Welcome back to the K-League United podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Walters, joined by Matthew Binns.
Hello.
And George Slade.
Hello.
And gentlemen, let's stick with K-League 2 and let's talk about the weekend that's coming up. Round 13 is upon us. It's hard to believe that we're 13 rounds into this already, but we have the really ridiculously exciting 3rd vs 4th, JG United vs Jeonnam Dragons, Cheongnam Asan facing off against Daejeon Hana Citizen, which, as you were saying, George, that could be interesting depending on which Asan side shows up for that. Suwon FC are facing Ansan Greeners. Those are the Saturday matches. On Sunday, Gyeongnam FC will be facing FC Anyang, and Seoul Eland will play host to Bucheon 1995 FC. Marquee matches. George, what are you saying?
So I'll be going for Seoul Eland at home to Bucheon, because seemingly, even though Bucheon themselves are very low scorers, while Seoul Eland, they're pretty normal at it, every time they seem to play, it's always got multiple goals. I think the last like 2, 3, 4 matches always seems to be 3-2 to somebody. And of course, our Seoul Eland writer Michael Redman was very ecstatic with it last time, with Bucheon going 2-0 and then throwing away the lead to end 3-2. I actually did predict 3-2 in my preview for that match, but for Bucheon. Yeah. So that's what I'm going for again. This time is probably will be 3-2 again, but who knows who will actually come out as the victors. So that should be quite an exciting match. And they are next to each other in the table. Mm-hmm. So Seoul Eland could overtake Bucheon, or Bucheon could overtake Jeonnam or someone else that's ahead of them. Let's, who knows? It's a very important match.
Yeah, like you said, those two teams, 5th and 6th right now, right behind the playoff line, which is a ways off right now. But yeah, it's nice seeing Eland in these kind of battles. And I would love to see these matches keep high scoring like this, like you're saying, and have a rivalry there, because these teams are really close to each other. And that could be a really fun rivalry. But Matthew, let's move on to you. What are you picking for the marquee match in K2?
As a John Book fan and a Man City fan, I don't do matches that are close in the table. I like them as far apart as possible. And I've looked at Suwon FC against Ansan Greeners, mainly as well to tie in with the interview on this pod, but also because I imagine that you have Jeju United versus Cheongnam Dragons lined up.
Why would I? I don't.
But it is worth taking a look at Suwon. This is going to be their first home game in a couple of matches, and obviously we've not touched on it even this week, but there are going to be fans back in the stadium. Not a lot, 10%, but there's going to be fans back in the stadium. It's going to be very quiet as well by the sounds of things. No real cheering or shouting, and masks have to be worn. No alcohol, lots of regulations there. But Suwon fans are finally going to get to see this team in action, and what a game that they can sit down for and sit quietly to watch. They're going to get to see their team that they've got to enjoy on TV a lot this season just potentially score lots. And Byung-jun has been fantastic these last two matches. Masatoshi Ishida has also just been working magic up front. And now Lars Veldwijk has joined the attacking trio, we'll call them. They just look menacing. I feel almost sorry for Ansan this weekend, but yeah, should be a good one for the home fans to watch.
And now that you've said that, you know Ansan's going to go and pull off the upset, right?
You can thank me later, Ansan.
Yeah, I did end up picking Jeju versus Jeonnam here because how could you not? Because it is third versus fourth. And for me, the thing I'm looking for here, we've got a good sense of who Jeju are, but I want to know if the Dragons, this new look Dragons that can actually play some attack, I want to know if this is for real. And Jeonnam's 1-0 win in May was their first over Jeju since 2016. So there is a little bit, not necessarily a rivalry, but it would be nice to get another one over on Jeju there. The Dragons haven't beaten Jeju twice in a season since 2011, and that required the FA Cup and extra time and Jidong won. That was a long time ago with a very different team, and it'd be nice to see the Dragons change history there. And also on an on-field note, Jeju have only failed to score once this season in K-League 2. Against the Jeonnam Dragons. Every other match that Jeju have played in, they've managed to get at least one goal. The Dragons are the only team that have held them scoreless, and it'd be great to see them do it again down on the island and break a few hearts while they're at it. All right, let's go ahead and move up a division. Let's move into K-League 1, where we are into the 14th round of K-League 1. We have a very tasty matchup on Saturday with Jeonbuk Hyundai Motors hosting Pohang Steelers, Sungnam FC host FC Seoul, Incheon United are welcoming Gwangju FC, and on Sunday, Gangwon FC plays host to Sangju Sangmu, Suwon Blue Wings welcome Daegu, a little bit of a Daeon revenge there perhaps, again, and Busan I-Park are hosting Ulsan Hyundai. That should be a really fun one as well. Some really good ones on the cards this weekend, a lot to choose from, so... Matt, we'll come back to you again first. What's your marquee matchup of the weekend?
Well, I said previously that I like to see my teams as far apart as possible. I've decided to choose two that are next to each other, and I've gone for Jeonbuk versus Pohang. It is the marquee match on K-League this week, so that's also why a little bit of synergy there, a little bit of a tie-in, but it rightly so. It's also going to be available internationally to watch. So if you are trying to tune into some K-League action this weekend, this may very well be the match you will be tuning into. What's interesting is both have cup matches midweek in the FA Cup. So the lineups will depend on how much they value that competition. It's also worth mentioning as well at this point that the cup is automatic Champions League qualification this year, as it is every year. But whereas second and third will be via the playoffs as from next year. So It's very vital that these two teams do well in the FA Cup, potentially. Pohang's got an established front four that seemed to be back in full swing. They were missing Polosevic for a while, but he's back and doing his thing. And Ilyichenko, he's scored his 10th goal last week. He just keeps scoring. But even Manuel Palacios, a player which we thought wasn't doing as well as we would have liked a few pods ago, he's started to come to life a bit now. And when he gets moving down that right wing, he moves. He could certainly prove to test Kim Jin-soo at left back, which will be an interesting battle. Kim Jin-soo obviously has got the international experience, but he has been caught out once or twice this season by a few younger players. Lee Dong-jun for Busan springs to mind. Jeonbuk are going to have to play Cho Kyu-sung up front, so because as Lee Soo-bin, their defensive midfielder, cannot play. He's also the under-22 player, but he cannot play because he's on loan from Pohang, and Pohang also have a Jeonbuk player on loan. They have Che Yong-jun, and that's also their captain, and that's their defensive midfielder. So there are going to be opportunities as well for Jeonbuk to win the ball in midfield. I think what we're going to see is something very similar to the Seoul game in terms of lineup. I think we're going to see Gustavo come on in the second half. I think Barrow is going to come on earlier than he did against Seoul, but probably still from the bench. It's going to be exciting. I think this one may have more goals than the 2-1 that was played out earlier this season. I don't think Pohang are going to sit back, which has been Jeonbuk's undoing to a degree in their last four matches across all competitions. I think Incheon sat back, obviously. Songnam, despite going two goals up, sat back for the vast majority of things. Jeonnam, they defended well. They did come back into it. I'm not going to say too much there, but also FC Seoul, they sat back as well. So I'm expecting Jeonbuk to have a bit more space in attack. It just depends whether they've got the players to capitalize on that.
Definitely. And I think that's one, like you said, the fans are going to be back, and that's one that I'm going to be keeping a close eye on because the Mad Green Boys always make a lot of noise there. And I watched Consadole Sapporo versus Yokohama F. Marinos over the weekend, and that was a little bit weird because like somebody would do something well and you're expecting the crowd noise that you've come to be used to, and like even with the simulated crowd noise, it's a really good replication, but that it's just like it's like a golf clap in the background of a football game. It was really weird.
I wonder if they're going to still do the simulated. I mean, imagine they will. I don't see why you would stop it. But yeah, I wonder whether they're going to continue with the simulated crowd noises on top of actually having 10% there. I know that Jumbook have allocated about 4,800 seats for this weekend. I know 3,000 going to season ticket holders, with the others going up for reservation. So I imagine other clubs as well have got similar things going on, trying to give people who paid for season tickets and had them refunded, trying to give them some priority on matches.
Yeah, which I think is a really good initiative. But again, it'll be interesting to see. And like you say, that's a really good point. I don't know if they'll do the pumped-in crowd noise over the top. I kind of want it when I'm watching it on TV because it was that Sapporo-Yokohama game was really bizarre. But anyway, George, what do you think is going to be the match to watch this weekend?
Well, not for entertainment reasons, but just for my own personal significance, I think. I think that the Incheon Gwangju game, I think it's a very good chance for Incheon to get their first win of the season. They have got those three draws in a row, which does not seem that, you know, outstanding, but Gwangju themselves have only got like 1 point in their previous five or so matches. So Gwangju's form is worse than Incheon, and Incheon are at home, and as we've been saying, the fans are coming back, and Incheon, they, even though it won't be a lot because of the limits, they do have some of the most loyal and passionate fans. That they're one of the teams where you can really see the boost that the fans can give a team. So I really think that it's a very good chance for Incheon. Might not be the most high scoring game possible out of the selection of fixtures, but I think it could be one of the most important games for the league, for the future relegation battle for the rest of the season, I think.
Incheon against a recently promoted side, that's got to be a big game for Incheon. So yeah, I really like that shout. Whew, speaking of relegation, the matchup that I picked is Sungnam FC versus FC Seoul, because I'm planning on going, but also because this has to be a win for Choi Young-soo. I think we have a mailbag question on this, so I won't go into it too much, but like, Seoul have to win this game. Like, it's just not okay to keep having these results. And Sungnam's narrow 1-0 win over Suwon, which may have taken a Survivor Series life from me. No hard feelings there. But that did break a 7-match winless streak for them that included a 4-game losing streak. And again, that was a 1-0 victory. So this is the team that Seoul's going against. And this is a team that haven't taken a season series off of Seoul since 2005. Seoul have to win this game. They have to show up. They have to remember how to play football. And they have to win this game. If they don't, then I don't know how you keep things the way that they are if Seoul lose this game. And it's not that Sungnam is a bad team. They're not. We've seen really great flashes from them this year. But when you consider their recent form, when you consider the history between these two teams, FC Seoul cannot afford to lose this game. I mean, we keep seeing this week after week, and they keep losing. But I mean, at some point, there has to be a match that's going to make a change. And to me, that's got to be this weekend for them.
Well, yeah, especially with Incheon potentially getting something at Gwangju. That's what Georgia said. That's what Georgia said there. He's definitely said that Incheon are going to beat Gwangju.
That's what I heard. So,
yeah. No, but massive match for Seoul. And I mean, yeah, it's a derby, so it's still already got that local rivalry to it anyway.
Yeah, so should be an interesting one. And, you know, and again, we could go over all of the matches, but we don't necessarily have all the time for that. There are a ton of other really good ones on there. Can't touch on all of them, but they will be on this weekend, and we'll have previews galore on the site. But we're going to take a really quick break and talk a little bit more about this weekend and a few other things when we hop into the Ilji Luis mailbag. We'll be right back.
Ilji Luis is your neighborhood British bar and cafe located in the Old Jiro district of Seoul. Decorated in old English antiques and furniture for a true homely feel, you can enjoy homemade scones, cakes and afternoon tea during the day, and traditional British favourites like beef stew, English ale and a fine selection of wines at night. Available for private parties or simply an evening out, Old G. Lewis is sure to become your favourite neighbourhood pub. Be sure to mention K-League United at the bar during your visit and you'll get 10% off your bill.
Welcome back to the K-League United podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Walters, joined by George Slade.
Hello.
And leading us in the Old G. Lewis mailbag, it's Matthew Binns.
Hello. Yes, it is. This week's Old G. Lewis mailbag is, well, we're trying to catch up, let's say. We've had a few messages that have gone under the radar or not been able to squeeze into recent podcasts. So we thought we'll take a break off from our usual mailbag calls and we'll just go through some of the recent ones that we've missed. So first out of the mailbag is Dan Croydon, and he was asking, who are our K2 unsung heroes so far this season?
Well, again, got to focus on Buchan because this is my chance to do so.
Hey, we talk about Buchan.
I know. And I think the player for me, he actually did get mentioned when Matthew and Paul did the under 22 episode, is Buchan's under 22 defender, Kim Kang San, who has just performed really well in his debut professional season. He's, as was previously mentioned, he is not used just to fill a quota. He is playing every single minute of every single match that he starts, and the only game that he missed was due to suspension. That is outstanding for a player of his age, and I believe that he has contributed just very well to Buchan's defence, which is one of the better defensive records in the league. So to show that kind of maturity at such a young age, I think that is very much an unsung hero. So Kim Kang-san is my answer.
Yeah, I'll stick on that end of the pitch for mine. And I don't know if he's quite unsung, but I'm never going to think that he gets enough attention. And that's Park Joon-hyuk in net for the Jeonnam Dragons. I've sung his praises before. Jeonnam's not as good as they are without him. And I don't think they're anywhere near fourth without him. So I think he's one of the unsung heroes because goalkeepers very rarely ever get enough love.
Okay. The next one in the mailbag is going to be Azri Furman. He asked last week, what do you think of the signing of Kang Sung-jo by Gyeongnam from Kelantan FA of Malaysia?
Well, he's 34 and he's been all over in K-League. He's been all over in Asia. I think he's somebody that could maybe do a job for them. I don't know. It's hard for us to get much footage on the Malaysian League. It's tough for us to watch that league outside the Champions League and AFC Cup. But, I mean, it's hard to go wrong for Gyeongnam right now, isn't it? Anybody that can try to bring some stability, because the team's just been absolutely all over the place. And I think that's where he could be good. He's a veteran signing. He's been with Gyeongnam before. This is his third stint with the club, so he's familiar with the surroundings. He could be a cool head in the midfield. I haven't seen enough of him recently to really weigh in on it. But again, with Gyeongnam, there's really only one direction to go.
I have mentioned him in one of my Koreans Overseas articles. But yeah, I think that Gyeongnam, that's the thing with K-League 2 is that I guess one of the benefits for clubs is that because there is no relegation, there is kind of nowhere to go but up, and you can kind of experiment a bit more with signings. And it's a case of, well, if we go up the table, great. If not, not so bad. We start again next season. So there's no real actual drawback for signing him, I think.
Okay. Next in the mailbag, we have one which I'm probably going to take the lead on. It's from Devin Rowcliffe. He has asked, after going winless in three league matches, including dropping points to Minnow's Songnam and Incheon, this was sent in last week, as Jeonbuk have now beat Minnow's FC Seoul. Jeonbuk Motors manager Jose Moraes. Has Jeonbuk Motors manager Jose Moraes been exposed? Is the strong squad carrying the Portuguese manager, or is the club's poor form merely a blip soon to be corrected? I think you've got to look at the stats. The stats suggest that Jeonbuk are leading for expected goals. They are still creating the most chances in the league. Yes, the accuracy has been off, but we've mentioned before they are creating chances. They're just not scoring them. And there is that thought that it's going to click and a team's going to get thrashed. But there is a bit more to it than this. I've followed John Book extensively as part of this website. This is my fifth season. And what I've noticed in that time is the shift, especially between managers. Che Kang-hee used to play quite a pressing game. Che Kang-hee used to get unfairly labelled as a long ball manager. He wasn't that, but he did utilise a target man. It used to be Kim Shin-Uk used to drop back and play in two pacey wingers, usually Lopez and Eder, Leonardo, whoever was on the other wing at the other time. What's kind of happened since then, Jose Mourinho's, the two main differences, one I think is by design, the other one I think is partly a side effect of something else. So by design, John Book are passing it more out from the back. The statistics show that the keeper's not going long, Son Bonkum's rolling it out, they're playing up slowly, trying to play a good passing game. John Book's possession is a lot higher than it used to be. John Book used to cede possession under Che Kang-hee in Champions League, always. Every game, it was nearly always, they'd cede possession and they'd counter. So whereas Mahrez is giving teams too much time. He's slow. It's slow in the build-up. It's calculated. It's meticulous to an extent until it gets to the final third. Mm-hmm. And that's where the other issue comes in. There are too many crosses.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I'm going to say is slightly contradictory, but what is happening with John Book is the wingers are coming inside. Now, they used to come inside with Che Kang-hee, but the wingers aren't coming inside at pace. Now, part of this is due to this season as well. We got rid of Lopez. Mm-hmm. Moon Son Min went to the army. That's two very fast wingers that used to move inside, but they're moving at such pace that it would leave defences unorganised. Or they could move down the wing and stretch defences they pulled out. What's happening now is you've got sometimes Kim Bo-kyung. On the other wing, you've had Murillo. Both of them, they tend to come in, but they're slower. They're not as fast. When that happens, you get teams like Incheon, teams like Songnam, teams like Seoul. They just crowd the box, and there's no space there. Now, normally a team would try and then push the wing backs up to play, spread the play, but instead, John Book's wing backs come up and just crossing. They're just crossing in. And what we saw against Seoul on Sunday is we saw the return of a fast-paced winner. I think it's why Han Kyo-won has been so successful this season, because he's probably the fastest winger John Book have until Barrow has come in. And you look at what Barrow's immediate impact, he ran down that wing and John Book's Seoul's defence was wide, it was open, there's lots of space there and they're scrambling. And I think that's kind of the effect Moon Son Min had last season. I'm not saying it's all Mahrez's fault. I just think John Book have lost a lot of pace, both in terms of personnel and their build-up play. John Book are building up far too slowly, but because they haven't got the pacey wingers to still take advantage of teams, they are now just coming up against compact defences. They're coming up against 9-10 players all sitting in their own box, and they have no idea how to break it down. Final thing, I'm going right off topic here, but look at Kim Shin-Uk as well. Kim Shin-Uk had a career
Bring up Kim Shin-Uk. Oh my God, yeah. Keep going, Vince. Keep going.
Sorry, this is the final one. Kim Shin-Uk is opening 6 months for John Book last season. He scored 9 league goals, scored a few in the Champions League as well. And that was because all the balls were being pumped into him and he was the attacking target man. Whereas under Che, he was more of a supporting character and let other players come into play. And all Jose Mahrez has done every window is try to replace that. Every press release of every John Book striker that's come in has gone, he's big, he's tall, can get a good head on it. Gustavo had it when he came in. Samuel Rosa had it when he came in. Lars Vallsvik also had it in his press releases, with many saying he's going to be the new Wookiee. There is that conscious decision to play these crosses into target men, and it doesn't work. It's too slow, and it's allowing defences to be too crowded. So, yes, Mahrez is at fault tactically. Something needs to be changed, but he also hasn't had the personnel either.
Can I just give the TLDR version of that? The short answer, in my opinion, would be yes, the squad is carrying him.
I think there's something significant about the way how John Book fight back from being a goal down.
You and I have talked about this a lot off the pod, but I think you're 100% right that when the game gets late, they come to life. The players come to life.
Yeah, I think that's also just something that's ingrained into them. Anyway, they are my long-winded thoughts. A lot of rambling there. Anything to add, George? We'll move on to the next question because there is another mailbag question and I believe we've gone miles over time. And that was one via email. It was Kim Sejin. He's asking, how much time will Che Young-soo be given? FC Seoul manager Che Young-soo.
Well, I think we alluded to it earlier. You would think it would be maybe the next few games could be the deciding factor, but he's already been given a lot of time. So I'm not sure. Could he be, could it be another like EM Seng situation where it's just going on and on. I hope not. I really hope not. But sometimes you just don't know where some of, like, you know, the higher up board members of a football club are actually thinking about this. So I really don't know, to be honest.
Yeah, and I think that you've hit the nail on the head there with what the higher ups are thinking, because Paul brought this up in the Ki Sung Young press conference pod, that it looks like Che may have lost the locker room. And that's kind of hard to believe, given how he came back in a rescue attempt that ended up working, barely, but it ended up working, got back into ACL. And now this year, though, like you were saying just now, George, and like you were saying at the beginning of the pod, Matt, with how they played against Jeonbuk, what is this team? So, I mean, again, they have to beat Seongnam, and if they don't, and if the board has any concern over the direction of this team and they don't beat Seongnam this weekend, I think he's got to go. Willie, I don't know. I'm 100% with you on that one, George. I could see this being another EM Sang situation.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I don't think he will go, whatever happens this weekend. I think they're just giving him Ki Sung Young, and he could probably point to that saying, I've got players coming, I've got a plan, just let me get Key fit and let's see what happens from there. And I think the Seoul board will do that.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Anyway, that ends the mailbag there. So if you do have questions for next week's podcast, then please get them in via Facebook, Twitter, email info@kleagueunited.com. If you want to support us on Patreon, then you can do so. That's patreon.com/kleagueunited. We have exclusive editorial pieces there, podcast extras, writers chats, and much, much more. Tiers start as low as $1, but there's also a $3 and a $5 tier there if you fancy.
Yeah, and if you would like to listen to this podcast, you may do so every Thursday live on Football Nation Radio down in Australia. Very weird thing happened recently. Very happy that they're remaining as Football Nation Radio. Apparently there was another entity down there that was trying to get them to remove football from Football Nation Radio, because Australia also has the AFL. So they won. They're still Football Nation Radio. That's a whole other rabbit hole if you want to dive into that. But I don't want to hear anything about Americans and football and soccer and all that anymore after that legality issue went down in Australia. I don't want to hear about it anymore. But anyway, they're talking all sorts of good stuff down there, especially as A-League returns. And if you are subscribed via iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, or wherever you download your podcasts, and you leave us a review, then you'll be entered into this month's K-League kit contest, which is for a Suwon FC kit. This is the very last offer for this Suwon FC away kit. And we've actually had a couple of reviews come in this month, so they will be in there. Our Patreon subscribers are always entered in, and then the fine folks on social media helping us spread the word are also entered into these contests. So get in there while the getting's good, because this is one of the best kits that we have left in the bunch, if I'm being honest. So get in on this one. Anyway, that's about it for this week. So for Matthew Binns and George Slade, I'm Ryan Walters. Thanks so much for listening.
Kim Shin-woo!